This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. It is the start of a new year and a new decade. And while you're thinking about all those resolutions you've made for your real life and your work life, here's something else to consider. What about resolving to change some of your online life as well? Journalist Jen Dahl recently wrote a piece for the New York Times about common internet etiquette mistakes people are making online and how to fix them. Also joining us is Victoria Turk, author of the book Kill Reply All, A Modern Guide to Online Etiquette from Social Media to Work to Love, which is out in the U.S. on January 7th. They're both here to answer your questions in this edition of Ask an Expert. If you have a query about email signatures or whether you're oversharing on your Instagram captions or just curious about how much punctuation to use in a text, our experts are here. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. You can ask them a question. Vicki and Jen, welcome.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. So, Vicki, you were calling. You were in the UK. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for making the time. You've written a lot about online etiquette, both for the Times and in your book. How did you initially get interested in this topic?
I think it's fascinating because I think it's something that we all struggle with. And it's really part of the burden that we feel in our digital lives, especially around things like, you know, work email, which is something that absolutely everyone hates doing. And I'm convinced that part of the reason we find it so difficult is because we don't have that kind of set of rules. We don't know what we're supposed to be doing, and so we never know if we're doing it right or not. So I'm hoping to try and, you know, demystify it a bit, I suppose.
Well, Jen, you wrote about email etiquette, which is an area I think a lot of people have questions about, and it's tough to navigate. Jen, what do you think is the number one mistake people make in their work emails?
I think that people don't pay attention to what responses they're getting. I mean, I think this is like a problem in communication overall, but sometimes we're so focused on making the point we need to make that we don't listen. And if you stop and you kind of listen and you read, you know, read the room or like read the response, it can help guide you in what you need to say that's going to be much more effective overall.
Vicki, what do you think is the biggest email issue?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think that's a great insight from Jen there. I think we all need to be a bit more careful with our digital communications. It's so easy to just fire off emails, text messages, tweets, whatever, so fast without really thinking about it. And we forget that it's so easy to be misconstrued. You know, you only have text in those formats to communicate with, and even if you're a really good writer, it can be so easy to write something without considering how someone could accidentally misinterpret it. So I think just taking your time is a really good resolution to have.
So Jen, especially if it's heated, especially if you're angry.
Oh, yes, right.
Yeah. Step back.
Never press send in anger.
Jen, what is something people think they're doing right in their email, but is actually not that great?
I think something I've seen is that people will be really overly formal, and that can actually, while, you know, we all, at least so those of us of a certain age, all had those classes where we were taught how to write cover letters and, you know, like dear and mister and things like that. And people can sort of revert to those old behaviors. But in email, you have to consider that it's a new medium, and a lot of the people that you're going to be communicating with don't speak that way, and you don't need to speak that way. So really, one of the most important things, again, is kind of like matching your tone to the person you're trying to communicate with, which we do in life very naturally. But in email, you kind of get taken away from, you're not looking at a face, you're not smiling, you know, you don't see what people's tone, you can't read tone quite as well. So you have to really, again, read and look and pay attention, and maybe don't try to be super, super formal, but also don't be so casual that you're going to be offensive in another way. If something feels cold to you, maybe rethink it. You don't have to use every single, you know, formal, like, like regards or, you know, one of the things that people told me while I was working on this piece was, when you start with a sort of more formal closing, like you say best, and then someone says, you know, XOXO, that can be very off-putting, unless you're both going to XOXO at the same time, in which case that works. You know, you've sort of like dropped that formality and it shows your relationship is growing.
Let's check in with one of our listeners. Claudia from Westchester is on the line. Hi, Claudia. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is about after-hours emails or emails over the weekend, or just like we just had this two-week holiday, and I was still getting work emails and feeling the pressure to respond, but also feeling like my job is not, like, I don't know. I guess I felt like I kind of wasn't being paid enough to respond over the break, so maybe that's too frank. But so yeah, if you guys have any advice around that or, like, the etiquette around politely not responding.
Claudia, what a good question. Jen, you want to take it first, and then Vicky, you go. Jen, what do you think?
Sure. I mean, I think in that case, one of the very best things you can do is set up an out-of-office email, like an auto-send, where it just says, I will be away from, you know, this time to this time. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. And if this is urgent, you can always, you know, reach out to me this way. But basically, you're not going to be checking messages, and you shouldn't have to be checking messages during a holiday. Like, I agree, you're not getting paid for that. That's also though something you want to probably talk about with your boss. If your boss is the person who's sending you those emails, that can kind of indicate another boundary issue that you might want to deal with, you know, not over email. but I do think just letting people know when you're going to be available and when you're not going to be available is so good in terms of creating that boundary right off the bat. And you don't have to just respond to email whenever it comes in.
I want to follow up on that. When is too late to send an email at night and too early to send one in the morning? Or is email just one of these things that's 24 hours and we all just need to get used to it?
I feel like there are different points of view on that one. Personally, I don't think it's a problem to send an email late at night, but you should probably look at who you're sending it to. And if it is something that could wait, maybe send it first thing in the morning. Again, it depends on your relationship with the person you're sending to. If your boss, for example, this is completely pulling it out of air, but like, say your boss is like, you know, you never get to work on time. I have a problem with that. And then you're responding to emails at 4 a.m, then that's going to show something. Maybe you're not sleeping. Maybe something's going on. So I think anything that can wait until business hours might be better. But at the same time, I also am very guilty of wanting to send an email when I've finished it just to get it off my plate. So I think it can really depend, but that's probably a situation where you want to step back and just ask yourself, does this need to go right now? And what might someone read into it if they look at that, you know, timestamp? Is that going to come off as weird for some reason?
My guests are Jen Dahl and Vicky Turk. We are talking about online etiquette for the 20s. And, you know, Vicky, your new book is called Kill Reply All, A Modern Guide to Online Etiquette. So how many follow-up emails is appropriate when someone just isn't getting back to you?
Oh, gosh, they're a nightmare, aren't they? Everyone hates sending them. Everyone hates receiving them. There's no good way to do them. They are the worst. But sometimes, you know, it is necessary if you really need a response from someone. I mean, I would only ever send a follow-up if you genuinely do need an answer. If you don't, then, you know, just give the person a bit more time because no one wants to come across as a bit of a nag. But I would say, you know, you basically get one shot at a follow-up. If someone hasn't responded to you twice already, that kind of is a response. You know, that's saying, sorry, I don't have time for this. If it's someone you work with who you genuinely, you know, they have no choice but to respond to you, you may have to revert to another medium, you know, try a phone call. If you work in the same office, go and speak to them in person. But I think, yeah, with follow-ups, it's basically you get one second chance, and after that you have to kind of take the hint. And that goes for social relationships as well, you know, online dating, anything like that. If you message someone and they don't respond, you can maybe try once more, but any more than that is a bit too much.
If you want to join our conversation, the number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. If you'd like to ask one of our experts a question about online etiquette, or if you want to weigh in on maybe you've made some sort of online resolution about your online life. Let's talk to Rich, who is calling us from New Jersey. Hi, Rich. Thanks for calling All of It.
Yeah, hi. I have two pet peeves.
Okay.
One is that people tend to add too many people on the CC list when a lot of times these people really have no interest. It just wastes everybody's time. And the second pet peeve is that if an email string goes on for a while because there's a group of people and we're going back and forth, and then suddenly the subject changes and people never change the subject. It's the same subject. So I look at these email strings and I say, okay, I didn't realize that the subject was changed.
Rich, thanks for calling in. Vicki, you actually write about something called the CC rule.
Yeah, so I'm completely with you, Rich. I share those pet peeves. They're both, you know, we can all resolve to do better on both of those fronts. And yeah, I think, you know, with CC, especially on work emails, it's often a bit of a political thing. You know, people end up copying in too many people on the email because they don't want to leave people out. They don't want to be seen as, you know, talking behind people's backs or playing politics. So they just include everyone. And it can end up getting a bit out of control. The CC rule, which I love and which helps kind of keep things a bit organized, is this rule that says that anyone who's in the primary to field of the email is the primary recipient of an email, and they are expected to respond. Anyone who is in the CC field is a secondary recipient who is not expected to respond. They're just on there as a sort of FYI to keep them in the loop. And I think if you follow that, it at least hopefully cuts down on some of the, you know, replies that just aren't necessary. I agree with you also, if an email chain gets too long and the subject has completely shifted, it's time to start a new one. You know, a new subject should be a new email chain, just to keep everything organized so you can search back for it easily.
We've got a couple people who have tips that they want to share with their fellow listeners. Bill is calling us from Schenectady. Hey, Bill, what's your tip?
Hi, yeah, thanks. I think this is a great segment. Just one of the tips that I use, especially since I've been criticized often for emails, is that I tend to copy all of the recipients out and just sort of put it in the body and then send it to myself and then take a look at that email as if I had received it instead of being the sender. And that's when I catch all my typos. That's when I catch maybe the tone isn't quite right, et cetera. But it seems to just never work for me when I send the email directly.
Bill, that's so enlightened.
Very smart, very smart. We don't tend to give things a second look on email for some reason, the way that you would with a letter or with a piece of writing. So it's a good idea to do that.
Bill, thanks so much. Bonnie is calling us from Long Island. Bonnie has another tip. Hi, Bonnie. What do you want to share? Oops, let me get Bonnie on there.
Very late into the night, and I don't want people to see that I'm sending them emails at like 2 or 3 in the morning. So I use a Google plugin called Boomerang, which plugs into Gmail, and then you can just like schedule it to go out at 8 or 9 instead of sending it at 2 in the morning or instead of waking up really early to send it from your draft. So that's been really helpful for me.
Excellent, Bonnie. Thank you so much. Our guests are Jen Dahl and Vicki Turk. We're talking about online resolutions. I want to talk about a couple generational things. There was this big discussion about, for certain generations, signing off a text or an email, okay, just O and K, is seen as aggressive, as opposed to KK. And I'm completely confused by this. Jen, can you go for it? Explain what this is about? Yes.
I don't know if I can enlighten it that well, but I mean, I think one of the problems with OK versus KK, it's not even, those things may not even be the issue. It's the punctuation. So just OK without an exclamation point, or even worse, OK with a period, is like somehow feels very bad, very, very sad and dark and angry. whereas KK has a little bit of fun flavor to it. And this is like a complete, you know, there's no science to this at all. But I think what you can get from it that is actually helpful is, who are you talking to? Who are you texting? Who are you signing off with? And how do they do it? And so it becomes like a back and forth where if you're constantly not matching, then there probably is some sort of weirdness on either side. I do know that like working with younger people in an office environment, I started hearing them and seeing them do KK, and then I started doing it too. So maybe it's just like a way to remain young by adopting the internet, you know, language of younger people.
Vicki, where do you stand on exclamation points?
Oh, I love a good exclamation point, actually. I think all of this actually comes back to one of the main difficulties of communicating digitally, which is that we have very limited tools at our disposal. You know, you've basically got mm-hmm. the alphabet, maybe some emoji, perhaps a GIF, or an image if you're feeling extravagant. So we've got such a limited toolkit to get across what could be quite a complex message or to convey an emotion. And so what we end up doing is reading into the tiniest things. So whether that's a period at the end of a text message or, you know, an emoji that we're not quite sure if it's appropriate or not. And we end up making kind of mountains out of molehills sometimes just because it's all we've got to go on. I think exclamation marks can be great for softening a message, you know, just to show I'm in a happy mood, this is not meant to be super serious. You can convey a lot with that sort of punctuation. Obviously, in a professional context, you may want to pare it back a bit because it's not always appropriate. So it's really context dependent.
Let's take a couple more calls. Mark is calling us from Morris County. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling all of it.
Oh, how are you guys doing?
Great.
I can't believe we're talking about email. I mean, what's our society come to, right?
that's how we communicate.
You know, a couple of things your listener said. I think I heard someone say they use a feature, which I know it's available in Outlook, but it's also available, it sounds like, in Google, where you can designate a send time so mm-hmm. you can get it off your desk but mm-hmm. not put it in somebody else's inbox at the same time. Because I think people do read into, when did this come from? And you said earlier, if it comes at 4 in the morning, someone begins to wonder about the sender.
Yeah.
I got one last night at, 12:30 at night from someone. I'm like, oh, my God, do they have nothing to do on New Year's Day other than send email? And then the second thing is that oftentimes when there is a big CC list, what I'll do is I'll summarize in the first two paragraphs or sentences. I mean, hey, here's what this email's about. Here's what we're going to need. And then I'll put all the relevant information kind of below my signature and bullet points so someone can scan it quickly, decide if they need something. And then if they need to be involved, great. And if not, they can just sort of, keep it in the inbox. But I think it's really important to kind of not make the reader work too hard through the whole email. And I used to write very long emails, and now I do a couple sentences and bullet points below my name.
Mark, thanks for the tips. Rudy is calling us from Brooklyn. Hi, Rudy. Thanks for calling all of it.
Hi, everyone. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So I think it's important that everyone include their preferred pronouns in their email signature. It serves a number of purposes. Not only does it support inclusivity, but from my perspective, my name is Rudy, R-U-D-I. That's my given name. That's how it's spelled. I get a lot of emails that are addressed to Ms., and while I don't mind them, I think informing somebody of my preferred pronouns is a way to avoid that. But also in an environment where we're increasingly working across borders and internationally and globally, we don't necessarily know what the preferred pronoun is of a colleague or a supplier that we're working with that's in another area.
Rudy, thank you so much for the comment. Jen, you wrote about that in your piece.
Yeah, that's a really important point. It goes for pronouns, it goes for a phone number, it goes for whatever information that you can give that is going to help someone else reading your email and help you communicate, sort of what you want to get across and also help whoever is getting the message understand how to speak to you better. You know, it's like basically email is just another way of communicating, but it's a major way of communicating now. And so what do you need to put forward that is going to assist you in that, goal? And so pronouns are really important, and so is everything else that you would want to put forward to make it clear who you are, what you want to achieve.
Jen, are there any email signature don'ts professionally?
If you're going to do like some kind of really deep in-joke or something that just people are going to be like, why? I don't need to know that. The fact is most people are potentially not going to read all the way down to the bottom anyway, but if the bottom of your email has like a flashing GIF with, unicorns, and maybe that's great, but it's probably going to be a little strange to a lot of people. So again, take it back to what are you trying to communicate? What do you want to get out of this email? What's your ideal response back? And how is everything in your email serving that goal?
Now, Vicki, your book is called Kill Reply All, A Modern Guide to Online Etiquette from Social Media to Work to Love. We haven't talked about social media yet. What is the biggest social media faux pas that you saw that people need to correct?
Oh, my gosh, there's so many, aren't there?
Give me your top three.
I mean, even talking about social media as a whole, because, you know, nowadays there's so many different platforms and they each sort of have their own etiquette around them. You know, you wouldn't necessarily behave the same on Instagram as you would on Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat or whatever it is that people use now. But I'd say, you know, there's a few probably obvious ones. One, you know, forgetting that these things can be seen by more people than you might expect and that they last forever. You know, you may only have a few followers or something, but if you post something that you may later regret, you could find that it actually travels a lot further than you had thought and it's quite difficult to get rid of after that. So I think that's one that people do forget quite a lot. What else? I think maybe spamming is also a major issue. You know, everyone's got that one friend who just posts constantly. There's just selfies and selfies and selfies, and you feel bad, but you end up unfollowing them because you just it's just too much. yeah, and I think, you know, it's just recognizing that we have different personas across these different platforms and you need to behave appropriately accordingly. So, you know, if you take LinkedIn, which is very much focused towards a professional network, you want to behave in that professional way. Whereas if you're on Facebook and you're only really talking to your family and friends, maybe you want to show a more personal side of you. And actually, it could be quite insulting if you were very officious and professional there. So it's really about sort of reading the room and being mindful of who you're interacting with as well as, you know, on which platform.
Let's take one call from Robert in Nyack. Hi, Robert. Thanks for calling All of It.
How are you? Happy New Year. Great topic. Thank you both. Question for you. What is the etiquette behind read receipts? Every so often I'll receive one and they'll ask me my permission to accept the read receipt. And I refuse. I think it's intrusive and I think it's a little rude and it's kind of a gotcha. Your thoughts?
Good question, Robert. Jen, you want to take that first?
Sure. So read receipts, you know, would be when the message, when basically you're letting the person know if you've read it or not, right? It comes in and it says read if you've read it. And there are varying attitudes about this. It is a very personal thing. You don't want to have those on for just everybody because you don't necessarily want to know, you know, if someone sends you a message and you have read it but don't ever want to respond, you don't necessarily want them to know that. So I do think having that request is a bit rude unless it's coming from like a spouse or child or, you know, someone who we have read receipts on in my family for people where we just want to make sure, you know, we know you got the message, you're still alive, even if you can't write back. So I think it's a personal thing to do and you would probably only want to have that on with close friends or people you feel comfortable with.
My guests have been Jen Dahl. You want to check out her article, What Does Your Email Signature Say About You? That's in the New York Times. And Vicki Turk's new book is Kill Reply All, A Modern Guide to Online Etiquette from Social Media to Work to Love. It's out in the States on January 7th. Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Happy New Year.
Next on All of It, our friends from Team Gothamist stop by to catch us up on the stories making news around the city, including how the clever Nevin Street subway raccoon continues to evade the police. Stick around.